It's June, and so to me, that means it's practically summer. And so this is when I pose a question to all of you. What are your summer reading goals? Or if not goals, what are your summer reading plans? Or if not plans, what are your summer reading dreams or aspirations or would like to do's? Because summer really is the great time to curl up with a book, sit out in the sun, and just enjoy a quiet moment. It's one of my favorite things to do and probably the only time I ever really tolerate the heat. For me, my summer goals largely revolve around doing research and revision for the novel that I have in progress, but I'm trying to make some fun time too. And so just let me know, what are your summer reading goals? What are the books you're trying to get to? And which ones should I pick up? Now that we've talked about all that, I'd like to introduce you to our guest, Grace Shim, and her book, The No Family, and our wonderful discussion on Emergency Contact by Mary H.K. Choi. Welcome to your favorite book. Okay, so welcome, Grace, to the show. I need to compliment you on something which you may or may not have had anything to do with it, but the cover of your book is just so much fun.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that. Thank you. I did have nothing to do with it, for the record.
But I've really gotten to appreciate cover art lately, and I feel like that cover really does capture the spirit of your book, just with all the different faces and all the different characters we meet and their dramatic poses. And it feels very soapy and campy in a good way, but also just shows like all of the wonderful colors and things. I don't know. It was just a really fun cover and really fit the tone of a lot of your writing.
I love that. Thank you. Because I actually didn't have, you know, I didn't have an idea concept in mind for the cover. But thankfully I do have a team that that handles that part of it. And my editor just loved the idea of modeling it after a Korean drama poster kind of. And they hired a Korean artist to do it. So it all just kind of fell into place. And I agree. I think it really does capture the soapy drama feel in just first glance.
Absolutely. And, you know, on that topic, Grace, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about this book you've got?
Sure. Yeah. My name is Grace. This is my debut novel. I have been writing for, few years, and this is the one that got me the agent and my first book deal. I do have another book coming out next year, hopefully summer 2023. Oh, wow. And I'm working on that currently. Yeah. And so this is my debut novel. It's called The No Family. And it's a story about a young girl who takes a 23andMe test and discovers that she's related to not just any family, but a secret family living in Seoul, Korea, who happened to be ultra rich. Mm-hmm. So that's the premise.
Yes. And I mean, obviously crazy things ensue from there. I mean, this book was a wild ride. I mean, it was just so fun escaping to something I knew absolutely nothing about. So I have never watched any K-dramas. I've certainly never been to Korea. To me, this was just like a totally different world I was stepping into. And I love that Chloe was our narrator here, because not only is she new to a lot of this, she's also just she's 18 years old, but she's so naive and she's green and she wants to see the best in people. You know, this is just her mentality. And she's just a great guide through a world like this, because she kind of feels like an inexperienced reader. You know, you're just kind of figuring this all out as you go along.
Yeah, that was exactly, that was exactly my hope. And I get it. She's 18. Sounds pretty like old to, you know, be figuring it out. But the reality is part of it was, you know, in writing this, she was younger. I had a main character that was younger. But, you know, when you're writing a story, there's all sorts of factors that come into play. And for Chloe in particular in this story in particular, to take a DNA test without your parental, consent, you'd have to be a legal adult. So I think that was kind of our number one. She has to be 18. And I think that her naivety is a little bit, shows her character where she's coming from. And that's where I wanted to start off with, is that she's been born and raised by a single mom, pretty sheltered, hasn't gone anywhere, has no family. So her frame of reference when it comes to family and when it comes to the outside world or experiences outside of your home is really limited. And I also often tell people, like, it might as the reader seem obvious to you, but like, I compare it to something like seeing your best friend in this relationship that is terrible for her and or him, and that they can't see it because they're just so, they want to see the romanticized version of it. They want to hope for the good, and they're coming at it at a different perspective. So I'm hoping that the reader understands that, yes, Chloe is, you know, she's naive, but she's also very hopeful and she's wrapped up in it. So it's harder for her to see these things that are so quite clear to the reader.
Right, right. And I think you definitely made that clear, because you mentioned, you know, 18 sounds old to be figuring it all out. But honestly, no, I think a lot of 18-year-olds, it's a transitional part of life. And especially if you've been sheltered from a lot of information and suddenly you're thrust into a whole world you didn't understand. I thought her naive nature just felt very understandable for this character. And it made me empathize with her, but it also made me want to like shake her by the shoulders a little bit. And I'm like, no. And I have to add this here. This is kind of my public service announcement for anybody listening. So 23andMe is kind of a big part of this book. So as my day job, Grace, I'm a genetic counselor. And so as a genetic counselor, I get a lot of questions about 23andMe and other direct-to-consumer genetic tests. And normally I'm talking about them from more of a medical standpoint, like, you know, maybe the cancer testing they're doing isn't clinically validated, or so to speak. But sometimes I get questions about the ancestry stuff. And I basically say, you know, you got to read the fine print on these things. And you've got to really look into this, because you're never going to know. You never know what you're going to find. And
you don't know what you're stepping into. Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And I just liked seeing that aspect of it. And, you know, you just, sometimes, you know, people are like, should I get my so-and-so a 23andMe kit for their birthday? And I'm like, well, maybe talk to them about it first. Like, it's kind of a big thing, but that's just my soapbox here.
Yeah, but I don't know how much backstory you know, but the story did spark from my own experience with the 23andMe test.
Okay, really?
Yeah, and I don't know if you want to go into that, into this conversation, but the short story is I was writing a totally different novel at the time, and I was querying it out, and I was going nowhere with it. And it was pretty sad. Actually, I take that back. I had a lot of the response rate was quite high. The offer rate was quite low. So zero to be exact. And I had a couple of offers on R&Rs. And so it was kind of like one of those, like, you've got something, but it's not quite there yet. And then the pandemic hit. And of course, that was a trying time for everybody. And it was a trying time for me as a writer, trying to think about how to revise this with all the, you know, stuff going on in the world. And then also knowing that agents are going through the same disaster, you know, alongside me. I'm like, how are they going to want to read another version of this? So there's a lot going on. And my sister, she took a 23andMe test for those exact main reasons that you first mentioned. Yeah. I mean, she wanted to know, do we have the bad cancer gene? Do you know, all of these things? And there is fine print. And I do think that there is a way you opt in or you opt out of being in this broader network that you can be a part of or not be a part of. And she was a part of it. She did get, you know, she opted in. And I so happened to be visiting her. We, you know, pandemic happened. So I just picked up the kids and I said, we're just going to go see your cousins. And when I got there, the first thing she said to me was, get this, somebody reached out to me and said that we're supposed to be cousins. And it was totally a random, we didn't know who they were. And it's like you said, you just don't know what you're going to do. It's like a Pandora's box. And so we have this moment of, do we open it or do we just ignore it?
Right.
And I think I need to be clear. It was this is a fictional story. This is not what happened without, yeah, without spoiling what it's like always hard to talk about it because without spoiling just how crazy it gets in the story, literally the inception is really all I took from that. And then my mind went with the story. And I actually didn't want to write it at first, but everyone around me was like, you have to. I mean, how often does this happen? It wasn't anything crazy. We do end up having relatives that previous generations knew that are no longer living, and my parents' generations knew of, but we just had never. It's one of those weird generational things where you kind of get you don't know of each other. So it wasn't bad. But I will have to say that your mind in that moment will run about a million different stories. And you know, the one thing that did compel me that I did try to bring to this story was that was a quite realistic feeling, was not knowing these people. And I say these people because it was it's one person that took the test, but just like my sister was the one person that took the test, it affected our entire family, right? So it infected that person's entire family as well. And the one thing I will have to say is that the minute you know that they're relatives, because when she was in our inbox, we were like, who is a stranger? And then the minute you make that connection, you're like, oh, they're family. Let's meet up. And I will say that that switch from that person being a stranger to family happens almost instantaneously. And it's a really weird feeling that leap, it's such a big leap to make in a matter of a minute or a second or whatever. And so I think I wanted to bring that. I wanted to explore that a little. Like, you know, that's kind of what Chloe got. She got family overnight. You know, she got an overnight family, and she really desperately wanted them to fill the void of all the things that she felt she was missing her whole life. And I think that's part of the journey that she has to go on, is to make that judgment call at some point.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of phrasing it, because you're right. You know, you suddenly get thrust into a family. It's almost similar to, you know, if you marry into a blended family, you may not know these other family members, but all of a sudden you are a family. You must act like a family. And there's this transition that takes place, and it is a huge learning curve all at once. And Chloe, mm-hmm. definitely, you kind of see her going through it in real time. And, you know, also balancing the fact that her mother works hard and doesn't have a lot of time for her, you know, through mm-hmm. no fault of her own, really, but it's just circumstances right. that they're in as the family that they are. And I felt that all very relatable. And another thing I really liked about your book, and to me, this kind of exemplifies why we need people of a specific culture to write about those cultures, is the nuanced critique you give of Korean culture and Korean standards. Mm. Like there's an mm-hmm. obvious love for this culture. There's an obvious love for family and just Seoul itself and all of that. But then there's also the darker aspects, you know, the beauty culture, the sexism, mm-hmm. the double standards, and mm-hmm. the impact of generational trauma. There's all of this that's coming there. And you can't really begin to approach that kind of nuance if you're not intimately familiar with this culture in some mm-hmm. way. And I just really appreciated, coming from a minority background myself, you know, just the level of mm-hmm. cultural criticism you were able to give for a young adult audience.
Thank you. That part actually means a lot to me. I mean, more than, you know, the critiques of the story, I do like put a lot of heavy emphasis on myself to, I know that I'm the, you know, window for many people to see into this culture mm-hmm. that's not theirs. And that's a heavy responsibility I put on myself right. to do it accurately. And so, and I also know that my experience is not going to, I don't want to generalize mm-hmm. anything, right? So I think that part was very important to me. And a lot of it is, I felt the best way that I could do it without stereotyping my, you know, own culture mm-hmm. was to share it from my own lived experience. Mm-hmm. And that way I can say, this is the way that I have experienced Korea, because like Chloe, I am a second born, you know, second generation American, Korean born American, mm-hmm. and my parents immigrated here. So I, whenever I visit Korea, I have a very similar kind of it's familiar, but not at the same time. And so through Chloe's eyes, I tried to bring what I experience when I go there, because really, truly, I am a visitor when I go there. That's not my home country. I wasn't born there. I wasn't raised in that environment, but I certainly aspects of it have bled through, and I have been exposed to it. And also just, the high society, like, I don't, my family is not, we don't have, we're not Chibor or anything like that, that rich high society. But my aunt is, after I wrote this, I did find out from someone who lives in Korea. I do have a really wealthy aunt in Korea who is a hotelier and, very wealthy. And I have heard, that's who I based kind of the grandma character after. And a lot of what I have seen and the nuances of how the rich live comparatively to pretty much everybody else is seen through my experiences of visiting with her. And I have learned from a Korean person who lives in Korea that she is actually now what they refer to as semi-chaebol. So there is like this in between, whereas before, and when I was younger growing up, there was really only that high, that 1% of Korea, and then everybody else and nothing in between. So it's starting to get, the gap is starting to narrow a little bit, but I did really not want to, I had my own struggles with, am I representing this Korean culture accurately? Am I making them look bad? All of these things were concerns of mine, obviously. Like, do I have the right to even write about it? And I think that it's hard for a di any diaspora writer to wonder if you can write about that culture. So I think writing it from Chloe's perspective was probably the easiest thing that I could do, the best thing I could do. And I really appreciate hearing comments about people who really enjoyed seeing it through her eyes as well.
Because I think, providing that grounding, that's something you're familiar with, being that second generation. I'm second generation Indian American as well. And so I definitely get similar feelings going to India. It's different, and yet parts of it are intimately familiar. And I like that you brought that level of grounding to Chloe. And I also like that, even though you were coming at it from a Korean American perspective, you weren't afraid to criticize things that you didn't agree with, or that the characters didn't agree with about the culture. And I think it's easy to just say, West bad, East good, or vice versa. But what we really need is just more nuanced talking about how these values exist on a continuum. There's versions of them in every country, and they perpetuate different norms and lead to different experiences. And you were able to bring all of that into what ultimately amounted to a really fun book, but there was still all of this in there, and I think that's great.
Oh, thank you. I did though have a moment. I'm like, oh, am I making Koreans and Chibors look really bad? Are they going to hate me? Are they going to ban this book? I was kind of doing that, but my a friend of mine, and you don't have to watch Korean dramas to know this, but we did, play on the tropes, the different tropes that happen in Korean dramas, and one of them is the whole the Chaebol, the rich family, poor girl kind of story. It happens time and time again, and that Chaebol family is ripped to shreds. So my friend was really good at pointing out Koreans do it all the time to themselves. They know that's not, that's a thing. It's okay. You don't have to feel bad about that. That's something everybody feels.
It's punching up, honestly. They have so much wealth and privilege that you're punching up. So really not something that going on there. And actually, I'm glad you brought up K-dramas, because that was actually the question I came up to you. It's like, you reference K-dramas a lot in the book. For someone who's never watched a K-drama, what would you recommend?
Oh, wow. Okay, so there was like a, I know. It really depends on what you're looking for, because, and this is why I'll tell you, because I wrote this book about, it's K-drama inspired is how it's being pitched. And I think it's because life really truly was imitating art, and I could not help escape how my life was really just a K-drama. And so we played on that. My editor, who does like Korean drama, she was like, let's play on that. And I was like, sure. And it was fine, and it was fun. And there were so many comps, but there are some people who love K-dramas, and who love romantic K-dramas. And we're expecting a bit of romance more than a bit of romance in this, and it truly, truly, it's a family drama, right? Because you read it. But I think there were some people who were disappointed because it wasn't a romantic drama. But there are a lot of romance dramas that are centered around romance, and I think there was like a list that just came out, and it was like top 10 whatever dramas. And I think the really big romantic drama is Crash Landing on You. Have you heard of that one?
I have not. The only K-drama I've ever heard of is Boys Over Flowers. And that's okay. I knew a friend who watched that one. And that's the only one I've ever heard of.
That is actually a very good, that was kind of mentioned in my book too, but that is a very, have you watched it though? You just heard of it, but you haven't watched it.
I just heard of it. I have a friend who was really into K-dramas for a while, and that was the one he kept bringing up. And yeah. I was like, okay, that's the name I knew. And I saw it in the book. I'm like, oh, I got one. Okay.
Yeah, that was, that's definitely one that plays on the whole, there's a common girl and there's this whole elite group of kids that go to like a prep school. So it's like rich kids and common girl kind of theme. And that's kind of what Chloe was, but there's romance in that one. So that one's kind of a classic that everybody likes. And it's fun and it's got heart and it's also, you know, dramatic as well, like they all are. My personal ones, though, are ones with ensemble cast that have a lot of different story plot lines woven in. So it's less about the romantic plot line and more about the different friendships and relationships. And so one of my favorite that I talk about all the time is Reply 1988. And it is a total, it's set in 1988. It's totally retro. I mean, that's when I started going to Korea in the summer. So a lot of that hit home, but beyond like all the, you know, 80s references in Korea at the time, Korea grew so much since then too. So it was quite a flashback when I was watching it. They did such a good job. But one of the things that really was so profoundly done in that story, in that drama, was all the different storylines woven together. It was about a bunch of kids going through school together and discovering out their own journeys and paths, but then also about the parents figuring out, you know, their own shit, you know, like they have to, it's, you know, it was great. It was great. It was something for everybody, right? And then another ensemble cast that I like is A Hospital Playlist, which has been dubbed as the Korean Grey's Anatomy. So it's that hospital drama, you know, but then also it's about the hospital staff, really, you know, and how their lives, you know, it's their personal lives, but it's also like the drama in the hospital that goes on, and then the family dramas. And I will have to say, I was watching that season the time that I was coming up with the No Family, and there were so many references to, without trying to, but there were so many references to liver issues. I think like 3 or 4 out of the 16 episodes were liver related. So I was like, let's explore this. There's something here. So I definitely was impacted by watching Korean dramas while I was writing this. So I think those are the ones that I always recommend because people talk about them. And those are the ones that I watched recently during the pandemic. But it does make me feel good to know that you didn't watch Korean dramas or you don't know what they are and you still enjoyed the book, because even though it's pitched as a Korean drama, you know, for Korean drama lovers, I hope anybody could read it and still follow it along. Yeah.
Right. Cause I feel like, to me, I mean, I think Korean dramas are part of it, but there's also reality TV culture and there's, I don't know, Indian TV serials. There's a bunch of, you know, these campy, soapy content that we go crazy for. So even if we're not watching K-dramas, there's a lot of that wonderful, delicious content to get into with this book and all the family drama. And I think that's something we can all kind of get into. So for everybody listening, even if you love K-dramas, even if you haven't watched K-dramas like me, I think you'll find something to really like in The No Family. I thought it was just a fun read. And I read it in a day. I thought it was great. And so, that's my recommendation for y'all.
Thank you. That's so kind.
Now, sort of going along in a different path, I just want to transition over to the book you chose as a favorite for the episode. And that book is Emergency Contact by Mary H.K. Choi. So for everybody listening, here's a little bit of a summary. Mm-hmm. So in this book, we follow the simultaneous stories of Penny, an introverted Korean-American college freshman, and Sam, who works at a bakery near campus. their stories come together when they serve as each other's emergency contact after a health scare, and together they navigate their messy family and personal lives, so to speak. So it's very much grounded in that and in their relationship. And Grace, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, when you first read this book and what your impressions were?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. When did I first read this? When did it come out?
Because I 2018, because I looked it up.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah. I was like, I have it right in front of me. I could definitely, I probably read it soon after, maybe if not 2018, 2019, but, I was just, I mean, I heard a lot about it, but the cover, I mean, like you said, I'm a cover girl too. The cover really drew me in. I mean, it is adorable with the, you know, pink and gold. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, you know, like there weren't many stories about a Korean American girl, right? Mm-hmm. So that all drew me in. And when I read it, I will say, the time I read it, it wasn't what I expected, so I put it down. Mm-hmm. And then I listened to the audiobook, and they nailed the voices. Mm-hmm. And I was sold. I was just, now every time I read it, because I have read it several times after, I hear the audio narrators in my head while I read it. And it just adds another layer of like perfection to it, or mood, if you will.
Yeah. I can't tell you the number of books that I just wasn't getting into it in print. And then a good audio narration just completely sold it for me and just made me, sometimes I find that I read really fast and like the audio allows me to kind of slow down and listen to the prose and get into the story and just let it be told to me rather than consuming it very quickly. So I definitely get that. Sometimes books just really click for you on audio.
Yeah. And sadly, sometimes they ruin it too.
That's true.
So, and you're like, oh, nope, not for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this one was a good one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was so glad that you picked this book because this is actually my second Mary H.K. Choi book I've read last year or maybe early. Actually, I think it was early this year. I read Yoke, which was her most recent release. Mm-hmm. I loved Yoke so much. Mm-hmm. And so I was just so excited. I intended to read the rest of her backlist. And so I was glad to read this. And to me, this book has a lot of the things I loved in Yoke. There's this deep understanding of young people, like current day young people, sort of the quiet ways that trauma can manifest, the development of friendship and connection just slowly over time. All her books are these like lovely slow burns, which I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. And there's this simultaneous maturity and immaturity in the characters where they think they're too big for their britches, but they're still learning a lot. There's a lot of that I really appreciated. To me, this book definitely did feel like a debut if you were comparing it to Yoke. I think Yoke might have been the stronger book, but I also say that with some amount of bias because Yoke is basically about the relationship between an older and younger sister. And I found that very compelling. But this book is a different kind of relationship. We see some fraught parent-child relationships. We see relationships between friends, between love interests, things like that. So if that's what you're looking for, this one might click a bit more. But I think both books just have a lot to offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you describe books really well.
I appreciate that. A lot of practice.
Okay. Well, I just really, I think part of the appeal too about emergency contact is that like, it's a slow burn love story. Mm-hmm. And Yoke is a very familial, has that really good family, like you said, complexity to it, and adds a deeper dissection of relationships. And whereas Emergency Contact, I think it does have some family stuff, but I really think it's a little bit more lighthearted in that, you know, it leaves you feeling a little more light and smiling.
For sure.
It's not as heavy.
I think that's a great way of putting it. And I think the thing that sold Emergency Contact for me was Penny herself. I found Penny to be really deeply relatable in ways I wasn't expecting. I have to shout out Mary H.K. Choi for writing a female main character who struggles to make friends and like spends a lot of the book without them. Because for me, I'm bringing in all my teenage histories here. I always found that like the thing I envied most in books, especially YA books, was the fun group of friends that they all seem to have and that they've clicked with and have been with for many years. And then for someone like me who was more introverted, moved around a lot as a kid, you know, I didn't have that core group of friends that I was carrying with me for years and years and years. And instead, I was just really awkward in social situations and like struggled to meet people, especially in college. And so, and she, we're hyper aware of Penny. She's this awkward, you know, very introspective kind of character, you know, afraid of being vulnerable, you know, at times downright unlikable, but very relatable. And I just loved the nuance that Choi brought to Penny.
Yeah. And I like how realistic it felt, because with the relationship with Sam and how that grew, I really didn't want it to be like a fairy tale. Plain girl, super hot guy, you know, plain girl gets the super hot guy. It's like, okay, that's so unbelievable in real life. You know, I know that there's a total audience for it. And you know, it's entertaining too. So it serves its purpose. I'm not dogging it, but I'm just saying this one was way, had a more realistic vibe to it, where I loved that they were both introspective and relied on each other. You know, they seemed like these characters that were very strong on the outside, but needed someone to shoulder a lot of the things that they were going on. And they sought that comfort within each other. And it felt very natural. It didn't feel contrived or made up. So I think I was in it. You know, I was like rooting for them from, you know, the minute they had their first awkward interaction with each other, you know?
Yeah, totally was rooting for them. They're two young people with baggage, and they're dealing with their own baggage and trying to connect to other people, and doing one of those things is hard, and they're trying to do both these things. And I just found that, I just love that Mary H.K. Choi brings real life problems to her YA characters, but still keeps the tone somewhat light and buoyant. These aren't characters that are bogging down in their misery. They're funny. They're light. They're snarky, but they're still dealing with stuff behind the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think beyond that, the reason why I must have some sort of a natural attachment to this book, because I'm still talking about it like 5 years later. But I think for me personally, just to see a Korean American author hit the New York Times bestselling, you know, list with a story featuring a Korean American protagonist who grew up just like me in, you know, a rural part of the US where, you know, there's not a lot of Korean culture. And really she talks about it some, but the book is not a cultural book. And right. I just love that. And I know that I've heard her speak at some, you know, one of her book launches, that she really wants to write stories with diverse cast, not about the diversity though. She just wants to write stories that have Korean characters and make it not be about her being Korean, you know? And I really admire her, because I think she did such a great job. And you know, that wasn't even, I know she wove it in there in a very smart and natural way, but it certainly didn't take center theme, and was a story that anybody could, you know, follow along and see themselves in Penny's shoes. And I just loved how she did that. And it made me feel like I could do that too, you know, because there's so much pressure for a POC writer to just write about our own culture and, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, things like that.
And writing it in a way that's like marketable and bite-sized and, you know, palatable, so to speak, you know, enough culture, but not too much. There's all these like invisible little barriers you're trying to fit into. And you can just often find yourself pigeonholing yourself in that way. But Mary H.K. Choi is just like, no, screw all that. I am just showing these characters living their regular lives and dealing with not so great family lives, you know, breaking down model minority myths or what have you, and just showing us authentic characters living authentic lives in different skin colors, which is great. Mm-hmm. And I think if there was one thing about this book that didn't quite work for me, if anything, I wanted more Penny and less Sam. Maybe that was just a personal preference. The book is sort of told in two perspectives. And Sam was a fine character. I liked him. I just found him less interesting than Penny. That's probably just me personally. I thought his whole little subplot with his documentary was kind of odd and just kind of brought in there. And I wanted more of him and his mom. There's like all these things that I either wanted more or less of. And I'm like, no, I just wanted more Penny. I think in the end, I just wanted more Penny. I like them together and I loved their text interactions. But then when you get whole chapters in his perspective, I was like, eh, you know.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And certainly Penny is the hero of the story. Like, she's the main character of the story. I think that was the takeaway, was very clear, even though it was dual perspective. So I understand that. I get that.
Overall, I mean, like, there's so much to love about Mary H.K. Choi's books. I mean, I think she's got one other that I haven't read yet, Permanent Record. That's the next one that I'm going to read. Like, I'm going to read them all. I will read anything she writes. I just love her approach to YA and how she never talks down to her readers, and she shows them sort of navigating independence, kind of similar to how Chloe is trying to find her independence. You know, you're newly an adult and figuring yourself out, and that's a fun age to write about and read about. And it's nice to look on, because I'm not that age anymore. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to go back. That was hard.
Well, I certainly am not either, but it is, I think a lot of the things that you go through, like you said, it's formative years. And I think even though it happened a long time ago, I do clearly remember everything feeling so big, and like emotions and experiences were so big and exciting, and, you know, everything's so green still. Like,
yes.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know, but this is all like starting to come off a little more stalkery and less appreciative, but my editor is actually the editor, was Mary H.K. Choi's editor.
Oh, wow.
And so when I actually got an offer for the No Family from an editor, I did have more than one. And when the editor for that used to edit, because she left Simon & Schuster, but the one that edited Emergency Contact, when I had a call with her, I was like holding back so long before I could fangirl. But I was like, by the way, that's my favorite book. And she's like, oh my God, no way. And it just felt so, I was so thankful that the call went really well, because I think it was one of those things. I was like, oh my God, Mary H.K. Choi's editor for Emergency Contact wants, you know, is going to make an offer on this. She wants to have a call. And I was just preparing myself. Okay, if she's not as cool as I think she is, it's okay. It's okay. You know, I was like, but you know what? The call was amazing, you know, beyond the connection with Mary H.K. Choi. And she knows I'm a huge fan. But beyond that, she's a great person and has brought so much to the book. But yeah, my love runs deep.
Oh my gosh. I am beaming for you. Like, what a like dream come true. Like,
it really was.
I could see myself in that situation with like certain writers and certain books, and I'd be like holding it back. Like, oh man, that's so hard. But I think, you know, these two books that we brought together, yours and Emergency Contact, you know, they pair well together, and they've just really opened the floor to a lot of great, intelligent, fun YA books that have been out in recent years. And I guess if I was going to offer another recommendation for people, I mean, I loved Yoke. I would read Yoke. If you're looking for something that features Korean characters, but maybe in less of a YA context, I'm in the middle of this book right now, so I haven't finished it yet. Stay tuned for a podcast episode a few weeks from now. But I am in the middle of The Magical Language of Others by E.J. Coe, which is probably the saddest book I have read in years. So not fun and lighthearted, but beautifully written, deeply introspective. Touches on some of the Korean beauty standards that exist in the No Family. And, you know, we see a little bit of it in Emergency Contact too, like touches on some of that, touches on, you know, fraught mother-daughter relationships, definitely. And, you know, being caught between cultures, a lot of that. So if you want an adult, that's a memoir actually. So not an adult novel, but definitely a great one. And, very, very sad. And this, I'm listening to this one on audiobook right now. Maybe you want to invest in the print copy, because I think the very sad voice of the audiobook narrator, which I think is the author, is like making me feel even sadder.
Oh my gosh.
Testament to her. She's a great reader, but it's very sad.
Oh, that will, yeah, that will do it.
Those are my recommendations, a little off the beaten path there. But Grace, do you have any recommendations that you'd bring to the table?
So I just finished, talk about audio narrators, and this was a good one for audio. And the only reason why is because it wasn't available in print at the time. I was looking for it at my library. So I got an audio book. But Interior Chinatown.
Yes, love that book.
I know. Yeah, I know it's 2020, so it's a couple years old. Yeah, but it blew my mind. I mean, it's not very long. It's also a quick read, but his ability to inject humor and a lot of different historical, you know, trauma, you know, racial disparity, like a lot of different issues into this short book. Because I haven't seen it in, but you know, as an audiobook, it was only 3 hours, and usually the audiobooks I listen to are like,
I read it in 2 days.
Yeah. So it's very short. So it is so impressive the amount of conversation he was able to fit in there, and also make it very entertaining, interesting, humorous, you know, for a very serious topic, and really just left me thinking. And I think that's the best kind of book, you know, because it's not only entertains, but it stays with you. It impacts you. It'll impact your informed conversations and in the future. And that's kind of a goal I would endeavor to, you know. So that is a book that I highly recommend.
I second that recommendation. And I'll give you another one as well. Every time anyone brings up Interior Chinatown, I always have to plug past guest of the podcast, Elaine Shea Chow's Disorientation. If you haven't read that, I think you'll really like it. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, people have been talking about that. That's on my TBR, my growing list of books. I'm like, when am I ever going to get to these? But I certainly am looking forward to that. I heard it was good.
Yes, yes. I think you'll really enjoy it. It's the same kind of humor and cultural criticism by Asian American writers. I mean, there's so many books we could choose, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, Grace, before we close out today, can you tell us a little bit about where we can find you and where we can find your book?
Sure. I am mostly on Instagram. I will put that out there, but I do have a Twitter account if you should follow me there.
I'm the same. Twitter is too sad for me. I'm barely there.
It's a different audience, for sure. The amount of engagement in general is just a lot easier. I've been getting so many kind messages on Instagram, actually the DMs. So, you know, if you like to find me, I'm more on Instagram, which is at GK Shim Writes. And that's on Instagram. And on Twitter, I'm at Grace Misplaced One. Do you want me to spell those out by any chance? I wasn't sure.
No problem. I'm sure I just found you on Instagram and you just got a new follower. So just letting you know that.
Okay. That's good to know. But yeah, and then you can also,
and I'll have links to everything in the show notes.
Okay, good. And you can also, I do have a website, which is gkshimwrites.com.
Great. And everyone, pick up The No Family. It is out in the world. You know, definitely do pick it up. If you're a YA reader, not a YA reader. If you're a K-drama lover, not a K-drama lover, there's something here for you. So definitely do recommend it. And Grace, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
And thank you all for listening. As a reminder, if you like the show, we have new episodes every Thursday. You can follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at YFBpodcast. And as always, we do have our short story book club for June ready to go. We will be reading at the end of this month, The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. So if for some reason you haven't read the story yet, which I highly doubt a lot of us read this one in school, definitely read it. There'll be a link to it here in the show notes. Definitely revisit it, even if you've read it before, because honestly, you'll learn a lot by looking at it with fresh eyes, and I'm so excited to dive in. And anyway, that's all I've got. Have fun and happy reading.